Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Hi and welcome this afternoon to Kosher Cravings. I'm Sharon Lurie, the Kosher Butcher's Wife, or Baba Shah, some like to call me. And I'm with Adrian Bugatti today, my other fly half.
What
can I call her? And we are talking, what's coming up next week? Purim. Okay, so we've got lots of exciting things to share with you today.
Yes.
And I know that you love talking about your Mishloach Manot, you know, which I prepare and I think, what am I going to do this year that's different? And I never get around to actually doing it. And then the next thing, it's Purim. Because I think I'm so busy worrying about Pesach.
Yes.
And I shouldn't, because no. Purim is such a special day for me, as you all know. Mm. My twins were born on Purim. And it's just such an exciting day that I should make more effort. So this year I decided I'm going to definitely make more of an effort. And you know what I'm doing for my little Mishloach Manot?
Yeah.
Well, one part of it. Gone to get little things from Consul, little glass jars.
Oh, stunning.
You know, with the lids. And I'm going to make cheesecake, fridge cheesecake.
Oh, wow.
In those little pots. Okay, so maybe it'll only be one person, but
hey, a taste of cheesecake is a taste of cheesecake.
Exactly. So that's what I'm going to do, I think. And I don't know what, maybe I'll serve, I don't know, something with it. What will I serve with it? A juice.
Yeah.
I can have a juice.
So the truth is that I think a lot of us get, okay, first of all, we start to already think about Pesach, which is wrong because Purim in of itself is a huge special miracle that, please God, we witness in this day and age with what's going on. But it was such a huge miracle that we need to focus on it before we even think about Pesach. And this is from somebody who's already started prepping for Pesach.
Have you?
Well, kind of. I belong to a WhatsApp group from Lindy Foreman, and every week she posts the things that you can do. Things like checking that the equipment from last year doesn't need repairs, that your gas bottles are full.
Local.
Yeah. Okay. And it's just such a nice one because she starts so long in advance that by the time you do get to Pesach, it hasn't killed your budget so badly because you've been like doing a little bit at a time. Like she said already last week, start buying your grape juice last week. And you build it up slowly. The truth is though, I do buy in the crate and I buy for the whole year.
Right. You know that on Friday afternoon, I was at Pick and Pay, and I hear the bell ring. And I thought, let's see what's special.
Special.
Do you know what is so special? The spices for Pesach.
Oh.
They were 10 rand each for these wonderful bottles of salt and chicken spices.
So for people who aren't able to keep them from year to year, it's brilliant.
Exactly. So I took a couple.
Mm.
I hope they've got some left for everybody.
is your couple of more?
But I must say, talking about Pesach, I just want to put it out there. Mm. I'm doing a dem on the 12th of March. If anybody wants to come to my dem, please contact me on Facebook on sclurie@gmail.com. And it's going to be fun. There's going to be all sorts of new and exciting recipes.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, all sorts of different things, schmear boards and lovely things.
Yeah, and I'm talking on the 18th at Adas.
Yes.
So you must contact the shul directly on planning for Pesach for your seders.
Okay, when is that?
That's the 18th of March.
Okay, so mine's 6 days before.
So we're doing... Pesach is definitely forefront of our minds. And like I said, we shouldn't be. And I don't know about you, but often I find, like Purim, I mean, we're talking about it now, but I'll be, okay, I'm planning. I want to do this. I want to do that. And the next thing I know, it's already Purim and I haven't done any of it.
Exactly.
I'm like, what, where?
You know, all of a sudden, like somebody contacted me and she said, Sharon, I need to ask you a question. One of the magazines. She said, tell me about, How have Hormantaschen changed over the decades, over the years? Why do we eat yeast? And in America and overseas, it's like the biscuit ones. And why do we eat yeast ones? We love, I mean, I can't imagine.
No idea why.
I'm going to give you a lovely recipe for biscuits one.
I think I saw that, yeah.
And where, you know, one thing is with the... there's one advantage to a biscuit one, and that is you can make it a few days before.
Yeah, and also it takes less time. The truth is the biscuit ones are quicker, and I think that's one of the reasons. But I'll tell you one way it has changed hamantaschen. How many more hamantaschen do you see it these days? People don't like it.
Well, look, it's stuck in your teeth and you can't smile for the whole day.
Yeah, that is.
I remember, like, it was just cream cheese and it was just apples
and more. That
was the story.
Yeah, now you've got all of them.
My word, you just look on an Israeli Facebook page.
Yeah.
You've got over, I think, 50 different kinds of
The chocolate, the hazelnut, and the... And they're just filled with everything.
I mean, lotus has been a big one thing this year.
Yeah.
I mean, or we had jam. I always remember apricot jam ones.
Yes. Definitely. Definitely. So I do think, like, for me, I think the biscuit ones, as much as I love the bread ones, I think the biscuit ones, first of all, are very useful when you're working with kids because it's easier for them to deal with the dough than it is with that big yeast dough where you've got to mix it and wait for it. And they kind of get bored waiting for the yeast to prove and all that kind of thing. Right. So I think to me, the biscuit one, when you've got small kids, makes a lot of sense because the kids get excited about being able to help. And biscuit dough, you've got to admit, is so much easier.
Yeah, it is a lot easier. And there's so many different things that you can do with a biscuit dough.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, I think we have to go for a break now. Welcome back to the
Kosher Cravings.
I've used to say that for so many years.
And we're
on to Kosher Cravings now. And we're talking Purim. I've got Adrian Gotti in the studio with me, and we're having fun with Purim.
Mm.
And we were just talking about Hormantaschen and how things have changed with Hormantaschen.
Yeah.
Tell me some of your wonderful ideas for Mishloach Manot.
So one of the things that I learned many years ago is, like, we were really struggling. You know, the kids at school all have this thing, and it's almost like the moms are trying to outdo each other in what they put in those little packages. And the truth is you need, like, two things, and then you can add, like, a coin for them to give to, you know, obviously matatla vanat. But it's important to understand that two things, that's it. They can be two of the same things. You only need to give to one other person. Yeah. You don't have to give to 100 people. But we do understand with the schools and stuff it is. And what I did like about our school was one of the moms, I can't remember who it was, actually arranged to meet at the park, that Galliot Park. I don't know what they call it now. There, the Galliot Road Park. It's just got a new name and a facelift and all sorts of things.
Oh, the one Glenn has?
Yes. Okay. We used to meet there, and then the kids could swap their stuff, and they were all in their Purim costumes. So it was really cute, which I liked so much better than driving around trying to get these things out. You know, but thinking about what you can get. And for people, if you're a good baker, then make stuff. Why not? Make your biscuit hamantaschen, or even your dough one, whichever you prefer. Like, that's simple, that's easy to make. And then get a box juice or some fizzer or something. If you know it's a family with a lot of kids, and I mean, you know kids, if one gets, the others have got to get as well, and it could cause a bit of a riot, then put really simple stuff in, like a couple of jellies in, like especially the new gummies now, which or something like, or pretzels. Don't go overboard. I mean, I've had some of the most beautiful Shalach Manot ever of, like, nougat and imported chocolates and, like, wine and things, which is wonderful to get. But if you're doing 30 or 40 of those, that's expensive. And you have to, nobody's saying it's wrong. If that's what you can afford, or if that's what you really want to do, then go for it. Mm-hmm. But I think people need to understand it's the symbolism behind giving it is quite important. And it's more important to be giving to charity than it is to be giving out your little Mishloach Manot. That is the truth. So if you can only afford to do one, then donate to charity. That's the more important thing.
No,
you
know? My biggest fears is that somebody will come and that you just don't expect.
And you won't have a present for them.
And you want to reciprocate, you want to give them back something and you don't have. So have a few at home because you never know who's going to bring to you that you can give back to them.
Well, when Alan Bender was here recently, for those who don't remember, he was the original of the show. And he came over. Now, they send me every year something for Purim, but they're in Australia. I cannot reciprocate Okay. Because the cost alone is, I mean, I did. I had a look into it and I went like, no. So when he was here recently, I bought a whole lot of stuff and I said, this is for the next 3 years. Because it just, yeah. It's the only way to do it. But it is important to understand. And there are a lot of places that are doing it. So if you're buying your parcel, by the way, if you're buying your Mishloach Monot from somewhere like a Selwyn Siegel or the Women's Jewish Board or whatever, yeah, it goes to charity. Who's doing it?
The Chevra doing, yes. Doing it. And I think opposite Sydney, I'm sure, what are they called?
Oh, Yad Aharon.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah,
so they're all doing it, and that is your charity. So getting from them, you're doing two things at once, which I like.
Yes.
But once again, you have to remember what is your budget. And all these places have different budget. Like you can go from a basic to like quite extravagant. That's not a problem. They've got all of that available, but you're doing your job. You're doing the two things that are required on Purim, which I like. But once again, like I said, if you want to do the little individual ones, especially when you've got schools and stuff, then you go to Macro, you buy your bulk box juices, you buy your bulk crisps, or the small packets of, if you're not Chalav Yisrael, small packets of Smarties or Fizzes or whatever. It's kind of like Halloween time, so you forget to worry about how much sugar you're sticking into your kids. You just put up with the lunacy that's going to follow. They're going to get that anyway at the Purim party. So, you know, that is, for me, that is an important thing, is knowing what your budget is and sticking to it and setting it aside. And I think we don't think about it. Like I was saying to somebody, that they were stamping my thing at the butchery so that I've got my points that you earn every time you buy meat and what have you. Yeah. And she said, well, do you want to use them? And I said, no, this is my Pesach roast. Don't do me a favor. And that's what I've done with the things. Like we plan ahead. And if you know that Purim is coming and you know that your kid's in a big class, say, and you're going to need to get a lot, do some envelope budgeting. So it's old fashioned. Mm-hmm. You put aside money every month, whether it's 20 Rand, 10 Rand, or 100 Rand, that's up to you, into an envelope marked Purim, and you close it. And you do not take anything out of that. And comes Purim, you've got 12 months saved up, 11 months saved up.
I think you're amazing if you couldn't do that.
I didn't say it's easy. Yeah. We did do it for a while. It is a little difficult when you think about you going shopping and you get points by using your cards. And that's how the banks win. But paying in cash, you may not get your rewards, but you're buying sweets anyway, so who's giving you rewards? Not your medical insurance, that's for sure. But it's a way to guarantee that when it comes to these festivals, your kids aren't going to feel like embarrassed that you're giving such a little because you don't have the money. You know, and listen, 10 Rand a month for 10 months or 11 months, it's 1,000 Rand. It's a lot. You know, yeah, it adds up.
Right.
And 10 Rand is less than a cup of coffee from Starbucks. What's it, Seattle? Where do you guys buy your coffee? Brewski?
Baruch's.
Oh, Baruch's, yes, of course.
Bustle Bay.
I love his coffee. But it is, it's an important thing to think about before you even start cooking, like you're going to do, and making all these amazing things. I don't cook quite as much as yours. My Purim tends to be, I mean, if we're not doing a function, and there was a while when I didn't. I think it was COVID time as well. I did a upside down day. So we started dinner at breakfast.
Okay, that's cute.
And we did back to front. You know, the kids love it when camp does it.
Yes.
So why not? Why not start your day off with a meatloaf and end it off with pancakes? You know?
Okay. It's something fun. So when do you have your day?
Lunchtime, okay. Usually. You know, it's just because people are home from, are able to, like those who can't actually get off work are usually able to get off for half a day and be home, yes, for lunch. But your su'uda can be bacon and eggs and, you know, that okay. kind of thing. So
sure.
There's nothing wrong with having your su'uda as a breakfast, having beautiful cakes and pastries and eggs benedict and all these kind of things for supper. I mean, it's just weird, but that's Purim.
Let's talk about dressing up.
Oh, okay.
What are you dressing up?
So we're supposed to go dressed up as construction.
Oh, so yes.
I'm going as the first aid person on site.
Okay.
I'm very unadventurous.
Can I go as the cook who's going to help anybody at the construction works?
You're the food services manager on the construction, with the food truck owner.
On the construction side.
So, yeah.
This is what we're having at our shul this year. We both have the same shul. So,
yeah.
Our shul is a construction site.
It is an actual construction site. I see the ground has been poured. But
very exciting. Very exciting.
But it is. And I think I'm going to send my husband and my son on their crutches.
Yes.
As accidents at a construction site.
Where can you actually get those hats, those construction? I'm sure at Oriental.
The Chinese places.
Chinese market,
yeah. I haven't looked. I must actually go have a look there. I know one of the kids wants to go this week. I can't remember which one, but one of them wants to go
this
week.
It's always very busy.
Yeah.
This time of year.
Everybody's going for the costumes. And they do. They have a huge selection.
They do.
They usually have it more Halloween time, but I think they keep a nice selection out all the time. I think a lot of it is the nursery schools and stuff dress up throughout the year for their letter days and their all sorts of other days. So, yeah, and kids love to dress up anyway. So, yeah.
Okay, so after the break, we're going to come back and we're going to share some nice recipes, for Hommentaschen, for the Sudan.
Yes.
So whenever I think of Purim, the first thing I think of, the first thing that comes to mind is costumes, Hommentaschen, what else?
Your sister.
The Megillah, triangles.
Oh.
Always triangles come to mind.
Well.
And in fact, this month's Purim thing in Jewish life is basically all about triangles.
Yeah.
And you can do... I mean, the things that you can make with triangles is just
everything.
Everything. I mean, you can even take a pizza and cut that into triangles.
That's it.
But why triangles? Because of
the hat.
The hat. Or, as there was another explanation for it, Haman's pockets.
Oh.
Taschen or pockets in Yiddish, I think. And, it's just... Haman's hat and his pointy ears.
That's, he was an elf.
All these beautiful childhood stories I remember. Anyway, and it's just, to me, it's just such a joyous, wonderful month.
The truth is, I love Adar, I love Purim, and it's great. What I'm enjoying more is as the years have gone on, people have begun to recognize that the falling down drunk, especially in kids, which as a medic, I want to smack the parents and the adults involved, but it's become less and less of a thing. I can remember being on a call and going on a call and finding a kid in a bush. He'd passed out. He wasn't even 16. You know, those kind of things for me ruined Purim.
Right.
And as I'm seeing, it's happening less and less. Yes, you're still getting drunk because, well, that's Purim.
Right.
But nobody's getting so bad that they can barely walk or talk for that matter. And I'm enjoying that more. And that for me, it was one of the big things that I actually didn't used to enjoy Purim, is for that reason. And I'm enjoying it much more that people have become more responsible in themselves and more self-aware of the dangers of the abuse and the deaths, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I have read a few articles. Thank God we haven't had it in South Africa, as far as I know. But I did read a couple of years ago, there were two in America from alcohol poisoning, and they were both youngsters. So for me, it's always been a very difficult holiday that I would almost like, do I have to go? Type thing.
Mm.
You know, I'd rather be at home. I don't want to see all this nonsense. I don't even want to have to hear the Megillah if I don't have, because it's just too much. But it's become much more enjoyable. I don't know, maybe I'm older. Maybe it's just changed. But it is.
No, but more responsible.
Absolutely.
Today. People are, even if they're having one or two drinks.
Nobody's saying don't drink.
I'm not driving. They are more responsible. People are Ubering.
Yeah.
You know, you want a drink? Mm. Have a drink.
Yeah.
Don't have five.
Nobody's saying don't.
Yeah.
Just you know, enjoy it. Enjoy it. And that's exactly how much you're supposed to drink on Purim, is that it's enjoyable and it blurs the line. It doesn't take it away. It blurs the line between good and evil. Right. It doesn't make you an idiot and it doesn't land you in jail or hospital. Those are the main things. So for me, Purim is, I enjoy nowadays going to shul, participating.
Right.
We do get to participate a lot now, a lot more than, you know. And it's just listening to the Megillah and seeing everybody enjoying the story. And I don't know, I think this year is more poignant because of what's going on in Iran, that it's feeling more real, more relevant. Even though, I don't know how many Jewish families are hiding in the area.
Yeah.
But it just feels that now is when it's supposed to be. And Purim has coincided so perfectly with what's going on. So I'm looking forward to enjoying the Seudah, to enjoying giving out my Mishlach Monat, to giving my charity as I'm supposed to. I think it just feels more special to me this year. And want to put more effort into the preparation and what I'm going to do.
I'm talking about Mishloach Manot.
Mm.
What other ideas have you got? Because I know that is something that people, lands up on my desk every year. What are you doing? What ideas have you got?
So simple ideas. I love your cheesecake in a bottle.
Right.
So one of the other things that I've seen, and it's been going around a long time, is your cake mix or your muffin mix in a jar. So you're putting all the dry ingredients into the jar.
Yes.
You put a tag on with the recipe.
Right.
And all the person you're giving the gift to has to do is the oil, the liquids and the eggs.
Yeah.
You know, everything else is measured and done and ready and there. And it could be your best recipe. If you're known for your brownies, put all the dry ingredients into the jar with your little handwritten or printed, you don't have to handwrite it.
Yeah.
I certainly wouldn't. Printed little card, tie it to the bottle with like a pretty ribbon and it's perfect. It's a nice idea to give as a simple gift. Another thing is if you are unfortunately part of, say, the Chev or Yad Aaron or one of those places where you literally can't afford to give gifts, are you good at manicures? Are you good at facials? Are you good at cutting hair? Give those gift vouchers. Make little handwritten gift vouchers. Yes, you're supposed to do a food. So give a gift voucher to say, I will make you a meal. Or actually make something and say, I've made you this. I've made you a pudding. I've made you a loaf of bread. I've made you anything like that, because you do need to give a food.
Right.
So that's an idea. And then, like I said, the other one is to buy the bulk stuff. It's cheaper. You go, I don't know, I would say China City, but you can't because I don't think they've got kosher sweets there. But if you can buy bulk sweets, so your standard fizzes, like that's everybody's standard. A big bag of pretzels that you then just take out a handful and put in.
You know, I did one year. I took a plastic cup, get them anywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And I filled it with marshmallows. And then I put into the actual marshmallows, I put in fizzes. I put in, this is for the kids. And I put in suckers and I put in Wonder Bars. I put everything sort of standing up.
And it looked so pretty. And it was simple?
Simple. And the kids loved it.
And the adults probably too.
Yeah, and I put their names on the plastic cup.
And that's what I'm saying.
You know, I do different things also for different people.
Well, we don't have to go expensive. It's the thought. It literally is the thought. Did you put effort and thought into what you were putting in? Or did you do it because it's expected of you? And I think that's the difference in what are you giving and what you're getting. I know you and me, you've got to have extras because in case somebody comes past the house and you don't have, we've had that. So that's important. And then it's like, so you've used a plastic cup, but you can go to one of these crazy plastics, I think it's called, and you can buy pretty colored coffee, the takeaway cups.
Yes.
Like in really pretty colors. And everybody gets different colors.
That's what I did one year. I took a paper cup.
Yeah.
And I put a tea bag inside, and then I put my Hohmantaschen on top and foil it.
There you go. A cup of tea and a Hohmantaschen.
Yeah.
What a great idea. You know, so little things like that. You know, yes, if you've got a few people like you really know them well and they're very good friends and you know they love soft drinks, you know, fizzy drinks, a small bottle. What have I got here? I've got the tiny bottle. We won't look what I'm drinking, but it's a 300ml bottle with a packet of crisps and a Wonder Bowl. Yeah. Or just it's a lot of sugar, but Hey, nobody's telling you what to eat. Not in this show.
You know, when I was at one year, it's my daughter-in-law did it, pasta and a little jar of, we can get fantastic pestos now.
Yeah.
A little jar of pesto.
That's such a nice thing.
If you don't want to use the pesto, then you just have the with the tin tomato mix. Tomato,
onion, any of those flavors. You can buy the Mexican one.
Yeah. And it's gorgeous.
It's a nice idea.
Put it in a red and white.
And that is perfect to give to somebody. I mean, you can give it to everybody, but if you know of a family that really is struggling, pasta and a bottled sauce or a canned thing that can just be heated up is an amazing gift because you've given them a meal. Like they can eat, you know, something for supper without having to worry about what there is. Yes. And that is like a huge thing. And really, pasta is so cheap.
Right.
It's such a pleasure. Other things that I would think of are, it's getting a little bit colder, a box of packet soups.
Okay.
So you can give a variety of packet soups.
Okay, we're going to come back after this break and we're going to carry on talking about Purim and we'll share some nice recipes with you. Welcome back to Kosher Cravings. I got it right this time. You're with Adrian Bugatti and Sharon Dury and we are talking Purim.
Yes.
I want to share. You know, I sit there teaching my little granddaughters about Purim. I mean, I haven't got the greatest voice, but they already know. I want to reach out. And they take my little pill bottle and they shake my pill bottle.
Getting old has some yeah. older gets has some advantages. But it is. It's I think Purim is definitely a kid's sort of festival. And I think one of the things I like is that we first teach them, yes, we teach them what Purim is, but first we teach them the fun part of Purim. And then we get into the story of Purim as an adult, looking at the actual meanings of Purim. And I think I like that, is that they start off with the fun and only later learn the hardship.
Exactly.
But it's for me, Purim is more about the togetherness and the celebration. And we eat our seudahs almost always at shul.
Right.
So I don't cook a lot. But like I said, the one year I did a back to front day. We started off with cottage pie for breakfast. And then lunch was just like a normal lunch.
Right.
And then supper, we did eggs and toast and bacon and fried tomatoes. We did the whole breakfast.
You know what I like
breakfast.
To do? I like to do a soup, like a Krupnik barley soup with little meatballs in. And I'd have it on the stove or have it in the crock pot.
Mm.
And you know what? People can't. When they come in, when they come home, when the kids come over, when the grandchildren come, they can all go to the pot and help themselves.
That's such
and
a pleasure.
That's what I do.
Yes.
And then, of course, I always make a challah, hangman challah.
Oh, yeah.
I plait it, and then I make a hangman noose.
Oh, really?
And that's the challah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to try that this year.
Try it. And also, what is a huge hit one year? Yes, it's very sweet. It is a sugar overload, but they love it. And that was, I made a challah, made it a sweet challah, cinnamon, a little bit of apple, a little bit, you know, some raisins and stuff. But the topping was icing and just hundreds and thousands on top.
Oh, wow.
Oh, okay. And that went down like a bomb.
I can imagine.
Yeah, they loved that. But then, so now I wanted to actually share a recipe. For hamantaschen,
please,
which is, it's not quite, it's not what we used to, but it's a cake mix box.
Oh,
okay.
So I always like the sound of that.
Yeah. So it's really quite simple. It is doughy, so you will be. It's more like a soft biscuit, but it's quite easy to make. So. You'll need one box of cake mix, just a regular vanilla cake mix, plus a cup of flour.
Okay.
Quarter of a cup of oil, 2 eggs, 2 tablespoons of water. Okay. Plus you'll need a little bit more water to seal the edges when you draw the whole thing together to make your triangle. Okay, so we preheat the oven to 180 and we line or you can grease a baking sheet. And in a large bowl, you mix together all the ingredients to form a nice stiff dough.
Okay,
and then on a lightly floured surface, you roll out the dough to about like half a centimetre. It's quite thin. And what you can do, what I have done in the last few years, when I make this dough, because I always make two kinds, because what I do is I make gluten-free as well, because I have gluten-free family. So I make yeasty ones and I make gluten-free ones. What I do is I roll the dough to the size of like a polony, nice thick polony, and I put Glad wrap over it, wrap it all up, and I put it in the fridge. And then it's easy when you take it out, unwrap it, you slice the circles. You may need to push them out a little bit, but you don't have to sit there and cut each one out with a glass. You just slice it up, press it nicely onto the flour, and then you put your filling in, and then you draw it up in the middle and draw it up on the sides to make your triangle. And you bake it at 180 for about, say, about 10 minutes until it's nice and golden brown.
Sounds.
And then you can actually dust it with icing sugar if you want to, or you can make a wet icing sugar, drizzle icing sugar, and put that on top. I mean, you can do all the toppings that you want to. It's as simple as that.
It sounds nice and easy and something I think I'm going to try.
Yeah. I mean, what's the harm in trying with a cake mix?
The truth is, I used to love making stuff with dough, babkas and machalas and stuff, but I have never made almond taschen. I've made it once, and that was it. And I have no idea why, because it's not any more difficult than doing any of the other things.
Yeah,
got lazy.
You make challah. Make it a little bit sweeter.
Yeah, that's all.
And then you just do it as you would your challah.
Yeah, no.
And then it's not that, you know what I do? I do the dough, the yeast dough, the night before.
Okay.
Put in the fridge, take it out the next morning, let it rise. And then
the truth is that my challah recipe, I've done it once, done it on the night before, and I came and we spent about an hour and a half cleaning up my fridge. Because it carried on growing in the fridge even.
Oh, you got to put it right at the bottom.
Yeah, no. It literally overflowed the bowl, overflowed everything. Because I don't use that recipe anymore.
Oh. I was going to say. Okay.
But it was an interesting thing. But it's a simple one. And you know what? I always forget that the homer taschen dough is so similar. You just put sugar in. You know, that's the only thing. It's a sweet dough. But my challahs are sweet already. I put sugar in my challah.
What is your sugar ratio? Two cups of flour.
I have no idea. It's 14 cups of flour, and I think I use 1.5 cups of sugar. Okay. Or 1 cup of sugar, something like that. But it is a slightly sweeter one. I know it's just different. So it's one of the things that I like. I do like trying to find out like traditional foods to make besides homer taschen, because we all do that. And there's another one, the fava beans, which we know as chickpeas.
Yes.
Apparently it's lima beans. Sorry, it's lima beans, the fava. And apparently beans specifically are traditional for Purim, especially in like Turkey. Where the beans are sort of, because of the how many there are, it's kind of like the symbolism of how many have saved, like kind of, that was one of the stories I found. There are lots. But one I liked was how many people were saved by Esther, is you can't count them with the beans, because the beans are so many.
Which reminds me, I've got a beautiful, nice recipe.
Tell me.
Okay, I've got to find it.
Yeah.
Well, it's this vegetarian krupnik soup.
Oh, yeah?
Okay, and I made it for the family.
Okay.
They thoroughly enjoyed it because they do like barley and they like all the bean things. But as I said, I put little meatballs in.
Yes, you
so
said.
So that everybody, you know, people can come and have it when they want. Mm. So, and why do we eat a lot of beans and barley and nuts and things. Because that's what Queen Esther lived on.
Yeah.
you know, because follow the kashrut, and yeah, she, that's what she had.
Yeah.
So we eat a lot of seedy things.
Yes.
not old seedy. Nah, yes. Okay, so you'll need 1.5 cups of barley, which put the night before, pour some boiling water over the barley,
mm-hmm,
and you just leave it to fluff up. So it's easier to boil the next day. You need 4 cups of boiling water for that. Pour that over your barley. You'd need about 4 cups of that. 3 large onions chopped, 3 sticks of celery, finely sliced. I like everything sliced finely.
Mm-hmm.
3 large onions, oh, I said that, chopped, 500 grams of sliced mushrooms, 3 large carrots, finely grated, 3 large potatoes, 3 bay leaves, 2 liters of water, and 3 tablespoons of chicken stock powder, 3 tablespoons of mushroom stock powder, salt and pepper. Now, the mushroom stock powder, I need to tell everybody here.
Yes.
The imana, you must check
that
it's not the creamy mushroom. Because creamy mushroom is
mochek. Yeah.
It is just a plain mushroom soup. Okay, that is part. So fry the onions and celery until golden brown. Then you add the mushrooms and the carrots, and you cook that for a further 10 minutes. And you stirring that every so often. Then you add the potatoes, the bay leaves, the barley, and you bring that to the boil. And then you reduce the heat, and you allow the soup to simmer for about 2 hours. But you stir it every so often. You don't want it to stick to the bottom, because barley sticks to the bottom.
Yes, it does.
Okay, so please just keep checking it. And that's why I prefer at this point to stick it into a
slow cooker.
Slow cooker.
It's just so much easier.
So much easier. And you can set it on half, about 4 to 5 hours. And that's it. It's easy. And then what I do is I put little mincemeat balls, like tiny little mincemeat. Do you remember? Like smaller than a ping pong ball.
Okay.
Okay. And mix that with a little bit of minced onion, some breadcrumbs, a little bit of salt. Mix it all together, and then I just drop it into the soup. You can fry it first if you want to get that nice caramelization. Once you fry it, add a little bit of water to it, and then mix that meat up and put it back in the soup. If you don't want to, if you want to keep the Krupnik soup parov, then don't add the meatballs. And it's just, there's a lovely little
that sounds meal amazing
with your challah, your hangman challah.
So one of the things that I'd like to try on.
Can we come? Let's try that after the break.
Okay.
Welcome back to Kosher Cravings. And I'm Sharon Lurie, the Kosher Butcher's wife, and I'm with Adrian Bugatti. We are talking Purim.
Yes.
So you were saying, Adrian.
Okay. So one of the things I like to sometimes try and look at over Purim is to try cooking foods from the region. So Tehran, Iran, Persia, whatever the names were, that's what I want. And I found one that I've actually used it even when it wasn't Purim, because I just liked it. And it is a braised chickpea recipe, so olive oil braised chickpea.
Yes.
It makes a great vegetarian meal, but you can also use it as a side dish if you want.
Right.
And the original recipe is from Joy the Baker, is the name of the lady who does it.
Okay.
This one, it does take a while to cook. It's about 45 minutes because you want it sort of really nice and crispy. So the first thing you need to do is heat your oven to 180. Let me just find the ingredients. Okay, so it's 3/4 of a cup of virgin olive oil. So it is quite a lot of oil.
Right.
1/4 cup of finely diced onion. Now, you can use any onion. I've made it with red onions because I ran out of ordinary onions, and it tasted absolutely amazing. 2 cans of chickpeas. You drain them, you rinse them. 1/4 cup of capers. Now, I have made it without the capers. It doesn't taste as good. So if you can find capers, and Kosher World has capers at the moment. So you 1/4 cup of that drained. A big pinch of salt and freshly ground black pepper. 3 sprigs of fresh thyme. or rosemary. I have used dried, so I've used a tablespoon of dried, and it worked just fine as well. And some chili flakes, a teaspoon of chili flakes. Now, depending on your family, a teaspoon of chili flakes, this feeds four, gave it a nice kick, but it wasn't like spicy. So you can add more if you want it spicier, and you can add less if you would like a less kick. So I have done it with like half a teaspoon of chili flakes, and it was fine because it was just like this hum through it. It wasn't spicy at all, but every now and again you would get, but I've got some that won't eat spicy. So when I'm making, I've got to see who's at the table, but I usually put chili sauce or chili flakes on the table. People can add it themselves. A quarter cup of black olives pitted and torn. So if you've got like other olives, you can use other olives, but the black ones I found worked best. Half a lemon sliced into thin wheels. Half a cup of crumbled feta or ricotta cheese if you're not doing vegan, if you're just doing a vegetarian. I found the feta was nicer than the ricotta when I didn't make a challah v'shrel. If you make a challah v'shrel, it works the other way around. The ricotta was better. Just because of the texture of the challah v'shrel feta cheese, I found it didn't crumble evenly over the thing, where the ricotta could be stirred in much better. Okay. So I like that. Some smoky paprika for serving and some crusty bread. So you're going to heat your oven to 180. You're going to, on a heavy base frying pan on the medium heat, splash of olive oil when it's hot. So you've got to put the olive oil in and wait for it to get hot enough to cook. Then you put in your onion and you saute until it starts to soften and become brown. So depending on if you're cooking on gas or electric, about 3 minutes. 3 to 5 minutes, I'd say. Then you take it off the heat, you scrape it into a baking dish. It depends on how soft you want your chickpeas. Is the size of your oven, your baking dish. It could be a medium-sized one or a larger one, and then you'll get a thinner layer. So that's kind of, if you want it crispy, then use the bigger one because you've got the thinner layer. It cooks better that way. If you're okay with it soft and without the crisp, use a smaller one. Not a problem. Either way worked well. Add the remaining olive oil, chickpeas, capers, salt, pepper, thyme, chili, olives, and lemon slices to the dish. Stir to combine. Cover tightly with foil and bake for 35 to 45 minutes until the mixture is bubbling and the chickpeas are soft. Remove the foil, crumble the feta and paprika, and allow to cool for 15 minutes before serving. Now, the reason why I said the feta, depending on the feta, is you can put the ricotta over because it doesn't need to melt.
Right.
Whereas if you're doing the challah v'shrel feta, the melting is a little uneven, so some places will melt and some won't.
Okay.
And then you just serve it. And it's a great light lunch or light meal, or it's a fantastic side dish. So it's really up to you on what you want to do with it. I kind of like it crispy, to have that little crispy crunch. So I will use a bigger oven dish and spread it out thinner.
Right.
But I have done it in the small one mostly because I couldn't reach the big one. I took out the one. And it was still delicious, but I prefer the crispy crunch. That's just me. So it was like a crunch, and then you bite in and it's soft chickpea inside. So that was what I like. What other?
So now I actually want to do, I've had a few requests for this.
Mm-hmm.
People want gluten-free hamantaschen.
Yes.
Okay, so not good with the yeasty ones.
Okay.
But with the Pesach dough, like the
biscuity one.
The Purim dough for gluten-free hamantaschen is crispy, and it's very nice.
Okay.
Okay. It's 2 cups of sugar and 2 eggs, and you beat there for about 5 or 6 minutes.
Okay.
Then you add about half a cup of coconut oil, if you've got coconut oil, or you can use just regular oil. 2 teaspoons of vanilla essence, 2.5 cups of almond flour, 1 cup. Now, people, people that are gluten intolerant will have all this flour anyway
yeah.
in their home. Okay, if you want to, you can use a gluten-free flour mix that yes. you can buy. But I just like the almond because it's such a lovely flavor.
Mm.
And so it's 2.5 cups of almond flour, 1 cup of potato flour, and 1/2 cup of coconut flour, or you can use desiccated coconut. And what I'd like to add to it as well, the awesome vanilla pudding.
Is it awesome? Oh, yes, I think it is awesome.
One of them.
I can't remember it. Pudding, yes.
One of those puddings, you put it in, and you just, as I say, you've added the oil, you add the flours, and you just mix it all together, and it really gets nice and firm.
Mm.
If you find it's not firm enough, add a little bit more coconut flour or a little bit more flour. And then, as I said before, you roll it into a large bologna and then you put it into plastic, stick it in the fridge, let it get hard, and you slice it and you do exactly what I explained before with the round discs and you put your filling in the middle. And the apricot jam is lovely. And if you've got any of that... the dough left over, just grate it on top.
On top, okay.
And it's almost like a
waffle biscuit type thing.
Yeah.
It sounds interesting.
Simple, and bake it at about 180. Those flours tend not to get too dark.
Yeah.
So you want to...
It's more timing than colour.
Maybe 190, but watch it. And as soon as... you've got to egg wash it. I forgot that. Egg wash it. And another thing, if you egg wash it and you put hundreds of thousands or the chocolate on the top, then you bake it. It'll be tasty and delicious. And when you take it out of the oven, let it cool, and you can dip it in chocolate.
Ooh, yum.
And then put whatever you want on top. So now, I see we have to wrap up.
Oh, my goodness.
It's the end. It's Purim, and it's... happiness all around, it's the joy of Adar. And I hope you've managed to find a nice outfit for yourself, for your kids. And don't be ashamed to walk around for one day in
dressed
up.
Looking like an idiot. It's such fun. Everybody does it on Halloween. So why can't we do it one day a year as well?
Absolutely.
I mean,
I'll never forget bumping into, I think it was Mushy Lipska, dressed up as a little doll at Pick and Pay.
It's such fun.
Good for you.
I do like that. One of the things I do like about our show is a lot of the adults actually go all out.
They put
in an effort, and it's just fun to go see all of us grown-ups acting like everybody else, like kids, and no shame, and everybody's like proudly showing off their really ridiculous costumes.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that we've got a theme to follow, I must admit. That does help me with my choices.
But as I say, go and do your delivering in your outfits and
just
have so much fun. We deserve it.
I love looking at the pictures from Israel with the guys. I think of the one picture I saw, which was my best, was a guy had got helium balloons and tied them to his pears. And he was walking down the street with these things floating. It was such fun. And it was so much joy.
Yeah. And they go to town in Israel.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. Have a wonderful Purim. And
Freilich Purim to you.
Thank you. And next week, I think we have...
Dolores,
she'll be on. And the following week, we're getting ready for Pesach.
Oh, my goodness.
Do you know what? It gets easier each year, I think.
You know what? We've had practice. You know they say practice makes perfect.
Exactly. Okay.
Have a great week, everybody.